Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the news, but who aren't necessarily experts. If you don't really want jargon, you don't have any time in your life for like political in-jokes, you just want someone to strip it all back and talk you through it like a normal human being. If that is you, then this is your podcast, and I'll be the one to do that for you today. I'm Julia Bell, and in this episode, we will be discussing the falling out between a war between our Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his former chief advisor Dominic Cummings, who left the role in November 2020. And famously, there are those pictures of him walking down Downing Street with that classic cardboard box. You know, the one in all of the Hollywood films when someone gets fired, they have to fill those cardboard boxes full of their photo frames and staplers and stuff. So he's walking down Downing Street with one of those, and he's standing on the corner of the road, looking at his phone, waiting for an Uber, I guess. I'm sure you've seen those photographs. And obviously that was a few months ago now. And Cummings had sort of fallen off the scene. And I did a podcast at the time talking about the speculation around him leaving that role. I think the episode was called "Is Cummings Gone?" Inspired. So you can check that out if you missed it and you want to understand that particular story. But now we must talk about something even more dramatic than that, since the two of them, Cummings and Johnson, like I said, are basically now at war. And Cummings really upped the ante. He took it from, you know, a Cold War type of situation to nuclear in his latest blog post. And that is what we'll focus on today, is that blog and what it all means and what the fallout is. And there's a lot of layers to it. So I'll sort of go through it with a fine-tooth comb. And in fact, just to set the tone, why don't I read you a bit from it now, just so you get an idea. So here's a classic quote. It says, "It's sad to see the PM and his office fall so far below the standards of competence and integrity that the country deserves." These are words coming from the man who, up until the end of last year, was the Prime Minister's ultimate closest ally. So something has gone seriously wrong with that relationship. So, like I say, in this episode, I'll talk you through the blog post itself, but I'm also going to get you squared away on why Cummings would have been driven to write this in the first place, because there's a lot of moving parts to this. And then I caught up with a great friend of mine, my old flatmate, Robbie, who works as a political journalist, and he covers this sort of insider Westminster stuff all the time. So it was quite fun to sit down and chew the fat with him. You'll hear that in the second half of the episode. So get yourself strapped in. This is the kind of beef that, you know, reality TV producers of like The Real Housewives pay big bucks to create. And we've got these two power players in British politics who are ever so kindly providing it for us for free. So there's a lot to get into. If you haven't clicked subscribe yet, please do that. Or click follow if you're listening on Spotify. It means you'll never miss an episode and it does great things for me. And yeah, let's start you off with a bit of background to this whole drama. Basically, Cummings, since leaving Downing Street, has been accused by the government for multiple leaks. And when I say leaks, I mean, you know, taking secret information that was meant to be kept within the walls of Downing Street and within the people that were in the room, and sharing that information to the press and basically the world. So he's been accused of leaking multiple massive things that have been deeply detrimental and inconvenient for the government, to say the least. And as those accusations have piled up that Cummings is what they're deeming the chatty rat, that's the name that they're giving for this kind of mysterious leaker. As those accusations have piled up that the chatty rat is Cummings, it seems like he's just snapped and gone, "Do you know what? I'm not having this anymore. I'm going to sit down, write a blog post and neatly bullet point all the things that I've been accused of and explain my perspective on them. And if I just so happen to damage Boris Johnson's reputation while I'm defending my own, then screw it. It serves him right, because he tried to damage mine. He fired the first shot by pinning the blame on me in the first place." So before I walk you through the blog, let me just explain the things he's been accused of leaking. So the first thing was Lockdown 2. I mean, Lockdown 2 was a while back. When did it start? 5th of November 2020. So if Cummings was pissed off about being blamed for leaking that, then he's kept a lid on it for a while, because we're into May 2021 now, almost. But yeah, cast your mind back to that time. So it's the end of October 2020, and the big newspapers like the Daily Mail, the Times and the Sun suddenly reported that the government are planning to announce another lockdown. Lockdown 2 is coming. And bear in mind, at the time, if you can remember, the government had been consistently telling us, no, that first lockdown we did, that's the end of it, don't worry, another lockdown shouldn't be necessary, you know, this isn't on the cards. So for that information to get leaked and for that to come out, firstly, it affected the public's behaviour. It caused a ripple effect that, you know, edited how people behaved. It got, you know, it got people moving, it got people meeting up, thinking, right, this is the last time we're going to see each other. I need to go here, I need to move my stuff there. Like, it actually had a butterfly effect on how people conducted themselves because they knew that they were about to go into another lockdown. And that's information that the government didn't want us to have yet. So the effect that that leak had, it's hard to measure. Did it have a direct effect on how many people caught COVID in the lead up to lockdown two? Probably, but it's hard to prove definitively. So that's one impact that the leak had. But it also, the second impact that it had was it called the government's credibility into question because it showed that, you know, what they were saying to us, you know, oh, don't worry, no lockdown, it's not on the cards, that directly opposed what was actually being said behind closed doors. So to have your credibility called into question, to lose people's confidence at the height of a health crisis is the stuff of nightmares for a government. So as you can imagine, Johnson was furious about that leak. And so an inquiry was put together to find the chatty rat. Who leaked this to the press? Who caused this ripple effect of damage on multiple layers? And by the way, we're still in the dark about the outcome of that inquiry, although Dominic Cummings is adamant that it wasn't him. So that's kind of one accusation that Cummings wanted to bat away. And instead of just sort of saying it wasn't me, he actually goes all out pinning it on someone else and pointing the finger elsewhere. So he pins it on somebody called Henry Newman, who is a senior advisor to Boris Johnson, but he's also a close friend of Carrie Simmons, right? Henry Newman, this advisor, and Carrie Simmons, Boris Johnson's fiance, are thick as thieves. So in the blog, this is what Cummings actually says. I'm going to quote it now, okay? The cabinet secretary told the PM that the leak was neither me nor the then director of communications, and that all the evidence definitively leads to Henry Newman. The PM was very upset about this. He said to me afterwards, if Newman is confirmed as the leaker, then I'll have to fire him, and this will cause me very serious problems with Carrie as their best friends. Perhaps we could get the cabinet secretary to stop the leak inquiry. So that's a quote from Cummings's blog. And he's directly quoting something that Boris Johnson supposedly said. You know, oh my God, I don't want to fire this guy. He's best friends with Carrie. That's going to cause me problems. Let's just stop the inquiry. I don't want to find out who it was in case it, you know, leads me to have problems with my girlfriend. That is so incriminating. Because he's basically making out like Boris Johnson knows full well who the chatty rat is, but he doesn't want to fire him because he doesn't want to have drama with his girlfriend. And bear in mind, there's nothing that Boris Johnson hates more, nothing in the world, than when people accuse him of being in any way under the control of Carrie Simmons, his fiance. There's nothing he hates more because he just doesn't like the idea that people are accusing his fiance of having any control or power at all in Downing Street, considering the fact that she is a completely unelected person. And Cummings knows that. Cummings knows that Boris Johnson hates this concept that Carrie Simmons has any sort of control about what Boris Johnson does, let alone stopping a very important inquiry, right? And Cummings actually goes on to say, this is a quote from the blog, I told him that stopping the leak inquiry was mad and totally unethical. I told him that he could not possibly cancel an inquiry about a leak that affected millions of people just because it might implicate his girlfriend's friends. So like I say, this blog does not just say, oh, it wasn't me. It turns the spotlight firmly back on Boris Johnson and says, you know who it was, you know it wasn't me, and look how weak you were at the time. So shots fired, but we can't be sure that any of this is true. It's definitely at the moment a bit of a he said, she said. Okay, so that's lockdown two. Tick, we've sorted that one, and that's one thing that Cummings was keen to, you know, deny leaking in the blog. Then there's the Dyson text message issue. So on the 21st of April, so it's about 8 days before I'm recording this podcast, Laura Koonsberg, the political editor of the BBC, so like the big boss of the whole politics news department at the BBC, she shared some screenshots that had been leaked to her of a text message exchange between Boris Johnson and James Dyson. I'm sure you know who James Dyson is. He's like the big time entrepreneur and founder of Dyson, which is the, of course you've heard Dyson, you know, luxury vacuum cleaners and hair dryers and those sorts of things. Anyway, you may know that James Dyson is a big time Brexiteer and a famously loyal Conservative Party supporter and donor, for that matter. But actually, even though he loved Brexit, he moved the operation of Dyson to Singapore right as we left the EU, which some people thought was a bit rich. But anyway, in this text exchange, which is from March 2020, Boris Johnson was saying, look, Mr. Dyson, please can you come back to the UK just for a bit to help with the national effort with these ventilators that you've been building, because we really need them. And James Dyson was saying, yes, I can. I'm happy to help, but I don't want my staff to have to pay extra tax while they're staying in the UK to do this. So can you sort that out for me? Can you go to Rishi Sunak, who's the Chancellor, the guy in charge of all the rules when it comes to who pays what and where the money goes? Can you go to him and just sort of sort me out a bit of a free pass when it comes to the tax stuff? Let me get the text so I can quote a bit of them to you. Yeah, so for example, a part of that exchange was James Dyson said, we are ready, but nobody seems to want us to proceed, sadly, James. And then Boris Johnson replied, I will fix it tomorrow. We need you. It looks fantastic. And then Boris Johnson sent another message saying, Rishi says it's fixed. We need you here. And then James Dyson put, thanks. I'll give the ventilator our all. James. So it's very direct communication between the two men of James Dyson saying, look, listen, as if it's like, can you chat to your friend about whether I can go to the party? But it's like, hi, can you chat to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, please? And make sure that I don't have to, you know, my staff don't have to pay taxes because we're obviously doing this hugely helpful and expensive thing in this national crisis. And then later on, James Dyson came back to Boris Johnson. Again, it's in these screenshots that Laura Koonsberg shared. And he basically said, listen, Boris, we've tried to reach out to Rishi with a letter that asks specifically for us to be, you know, counted as having exceptional circumstances, so we shouldn't have to pay these taxes, but he's not getting back to us. Can you sort it out, basically? And Boris Johnson replies, and listen to this, this is the big thing. Boris Johnson replies saying, James, I am First Lord of the Treasury, and you can take it that we are backing you to do what you need. I am First Lord of the Treasury. So basically, I am the big boss. You don't need to have anyone's backing when you've got mine because I'm the guy in charge. So that text exchange comes out, again, from a mysterious leaker. And the person who leaked it would have to have very close access to the Prime Minister to even have those text messages to send them to Laura Koonsberg. But the whole thing sparks this huge debate, right? Because you've got people on one side looking at it saying, look, Boris Johnson did what he had to do. He needed ventilators. He's got this titan of industry, James Dyson, lined up, ready to go. And he just needed to make him a promise that, you know, he wouldn't have to pay these taxes, whatever. Like, he just did what he needed to do when he was in a bind. But then you've got people on the other side saying, hang on, how is it fair that James Dyson had that level of access to the leader of this country during a pandemic? It's not right that just because this guy's so powerful, he can just casually text the Prime Minister and receive a message saying, you know, I'm the Lord of the Treasury, whatever you need, you've got it, kind of thing. It's up to you how you feel about that debate, wherever you stand, it's totally up to you. But either way, the fact that this was a debate in the first place was down to the fact that somebody who had access to those text messages leaked them to Laura Koonsberg. So Boris Johnson, who's trying to focus on other stuff, right? He doesn't want people to be saying, hang on, why is James Dyson texting you? He doesn't want that conversation to exist. He will have been very keen to understand who the leaker was. And the implication was that Dominic Cummings did it. Boris Johnson apparently was hell-bent on the idea that Cummings leaked those texts. But you guessed it, Dominic Cummings in his blog said, absolutely no, I did not do it. So let me read you what he put. All right, this is a quote. Re-Dyson, I do have some WhatsApp messages between the PM and Dyson that were forwarded to me by the PM. I've not found the ones that were leaked to Laura Koonsberg on my phone, nor am I aware of being sent them last year. I was not directly or indirectly the source for the BBC Koonsberg story on the PM's and Dyson's texts. I am happy to meet with the Cabinet Secretary and for him to search my phone for Dyson messages. If the PM did send them to me, as he's claiming, then he'll be able to show the Cabinet Secretary on his own phone when they were sent to me. It will therefore be easy to establish at least if I was ever sent these text messages. So there he's basically trying to call Boris Johnson's bluff, isn't he? Because he's saying, if you know for certain that I'm the leaker, you know, if you know for certain that I'm the chatty rat, then you'll have proof on your phone that I had those text messages. So why don't you just show everyone? Oh, no, wait, you can't, because I never got the messages. That's the tone, isn't it? That's that level of confidence, which is actually quite convincing, I think. When you read it, you think, why would he call the Prime Minister's bluff if he wasn't really confident that he couldn't have been the leaker? But again, we can't know for sure what's going on. Maybe, and he doesn't commit to never having been sent them. He just sort of says, I can't find them. So you never know. I hope it will come out in the woodwork, though. And then finally, I told you there's a lot to this blog, but I hope you don't mind me kind of going through it with a fine-tooth comb just so that you really understand everything around it. But yeah, finally, the third thing that Cummings had supposedly been accused of leaking and was very keen to deny in this blog was the issue of the renovation of the Downing Street flat. Oh my God, is this a story? I don't know if interior design has ever played such a big part in my career political commentating. I just don't think I've ever thought about wallpaper so much. But if you haven't heard of this, I'm surprised, because it's been a big story. And to be honest, I think this is the most incriminating bit of the blog. So let's start with some context. I'm sure you know that when you become a Prime Minister, you get to live in the flat above Downing Street. And you're kind of supposed to live in the flat above 10 Downing Street, because that's where the Prime Minister's office is based and it's all linked together. However, very often the Prime Minister will opt for the flat above 11 Downing Street because it's bigger. So that's above where the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, is based. But yeah, the flat's bigger. So lots of PMs over history have actually opted for that. Theresa May included. So she lived there as well. And famously, Carrie Simmons, Boris Johnson's fiance, really didn't like the way that Theresa May had decorated number 11. So she wanted basically a complete overhaul of Theresa May's furniture and decor and all the rest of it. And that was written about in Tatler magazine. And Tatler's this kind of very high society sort of luxury fashion, all things designer, like aspirational publication, isn't it? And this is a quote from that article, that profile about Simmons and her flat. So it says, quote, in the autumn, matters improved as Johnson's health recovered and Simmons turned to the task of putting the couple's stamp on their new home. It is, by all accounts, much improved from what a visitor calls the John Lewis furniture nightmare of May's years. Sorry, Tatler magazine. John Lewis furniture nightmare just feels like a bit of an oxymoron. Although that kind of John Lewis furniture nightmare bit was put in quotes as if this visitor, maybe it was like a friend of Carrie's or a friend of the family's, was pottering around 11 Downing Street and commented, oh, this is much better than Theresa May's John Lewis furniture nightmare. So this unnamed, very snobbish visitor, that's what they labelled it. But that concept that anything could be nightmarish about John Lewis furniture has pissed off everybody because, you know, including me, to be honest, when I heard that expression, I remember my uncle, bless his heart, he's not with us anymore, but I remember he decked out his apartment in Glasgow and he was so proud of it with these leather brown John Lewis sofas. And it was all my family could talk about for months was, oh my goodness, have you seen John's flat in Glasgow? He's got this John Lewis sofa. Have you sat on it? It's very comfy. I remember that as this like mark of an achievement within my family that my uncle, you know, had been able to afford John Lewis furniture. So someone like me to read that article where the fiance of my prime minister is supposedly sort of turning her nose up at this quintessential high street brand, it does make you think, that's not very nice. I don't like that. It just does, doesn't it? I mean, you can let me know what you think. But anyway, I'm getting a bit off topic here. There's a lot on Twitter and social media about this sort of John Lewis nightmare scandal that you can read into more. But the bottom line is Boris Johnson and Carrie Simmons moved into 11 Downing Street. They wanted to do it up because they did not like the way that Theresa May did it in her godforsaken, very expensive John Lewis furniture. So they bring this unbelievably expensive interior designer by the name of Lulu Little to facilitate these renovations, this overhaul. And the bill comes to something extraordinary, like $200K, right, for these renovations. And I've been reading things about how the fabric pieces that this Lulu Little offers are like £100 a metre, right? And anyway, in this blog, Dominic Cummings accuses Boris Johnson of trying to use, because it's so bloody expensive, trying to use a Conservative Party donor and the money that they've put in to pay for the decor bill, which isn't traditionally what, you know, party donor money is used for. But yeah, it's a hell of an accusation. And he kind of goes as far as to say, well, Boris Johnson was actually trying to fraudulently use this donor money and sort of secretly use it. So let me quote you what the blog says. The Prime Minister's Director of Communications has also made accusations regarding me and leaks concerning the PM's renovation of his flat. The PM stopped speaking to me about this matter in 2020 as I told him that I thought his plans to have donors secretly pay for the renovation were unethical, foolish, possibly illegal, and almost certainly broke the rules on proper disclosure of political donations if conducted in the way that he intended. I refused to help him organise these payments. My knowledge about them is therefore limited. I would be happy to tell the Cabinet Secretary or Electoral Commission what I know concerning this matter. Very threatening, isn't it? And to say things like unethical, foolish, possibly illegal, and to sort of claim he definitely tried to break the rules and the ministerial conduct. And then again, he used that term, secretly pay. His plans were to secretly have donors pay for the renovation. It paints Johnson in this fraudulent light. Because the PM, you know, I think they get an allowance of about 30K for all the renovation stuff. And to think that this interior designer's bill was literally six or seven times that. So that bit of the blog had all eyes turning to Mr. Johnson and asking, right, who paid for the decoration of the flat? We want to see receipts. If it wasn't you, who was it? And if it was party donors, we want to see a paper trail of you declaring that money. Because if you didn't, you're breaking the rules and actually probably the law. Now, what didn't help Boris Johnson's case here is that the Daily Mail published this kind of exclusive, this scoop, on the 20th of April, where they shared leaked, it's a very leaky government, isn't it? But they shared leaked emails between a wealthy Conservative Party donor by the name of David Brownlow and the Conservative Party co-chairman, where this donor, Mr. Brownlow, was saying, look, here's 58 grand and Boris Johnson can use that on renovating the flat. So why don't we call it the Downing Street Trust? This 58K, we'll earmark it, we'll put it to one side for those renovations, and we'll call it the Downing Street Trust. And what's quite painful for Boris Johnson is, again, according to this Daily Mail article, is that an amount of, you guessed it, precisely 58 grand was paid months earlier by the Tory HQ for refurbishments, including, apparently, expensive wallpaper. So that article, that Daily Mail article, very much accuses Boris Johnson of not paying that refurbishment bill himself. And not just that, but trying to secretly, basically everything that Dominic Cummings accuses him of as well, secretly get a Tory donor to put that money into a trust and to pay it without really declaring it. It's a very incriminating article and it ties quite well with Dominic Cummings' blog, which will have been hair-raisingly shit for Boris Johnson's profile. Now, I should say, despite those two accounts tying together, that doesn't necessarily prove anything, right? But Boris Johnson has firmly denied anything other than that he paid for it directly. He didn't have any malintent. He didn't try anything funny. He paid for it. That's what he said again and again and again. And as you can imagine, this has been a hot topic at the latest Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday, so Wednesday the 28th of April, Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, went in. He went in. He must have asked him about four different ways, kind of turning the question around different times about this, you know, paying for the renovation of the flat thing. And Boris Johnson gave as good as he got.
As for the latest stuff that he's bringing up, he should know that I paid for Downing Street refurbishment personally, Mr. Speaker.
Well, let's explore this a bit further, Prime Minister. Let's ask it a different way. Either, this is the initial invoice, Prime Minister, initial invoice, either the taxpayer paid the initial invoice, or it was the Conservative Party, or it was a private donor, or it was the Prime Minister. So I'm making it easy for the Prime Minister. It's now multiple choice. There are only four options. It should be easier than finding the chatty rat, Mr. Speaker. So I ask the Prime Minister again, who paid the initial invoice, Prime Minister, for the redecoration of the Prime Minister's flat, the initial invoice?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I've given him the answer, and the answer is I have covered the costs, and I think most people will find it absolutely bizarre. And, of course, there's an electoral commission investigating this, and I can tell him that I've conformed in full with the code of conduct, with ministerial code, and officials have been kept, have been advising me throughout this whole thing, but I think people will think it absolutely bizarre that he is focusing on this issue. When what people want to know is what plans the Labour government might have to improve the life of people in this country. And I'd rather not spend taxpayers' money, by the way, like the last Labour government, we spent £500,000 of taxpayers' money on the Downing Street flat. Yes, they did, tarting it up.
Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, he talks of priorities. What's he spending his time doing? This is a Prime Minister who, during the pandemic, was nipping out of meetings to choose wallpaper at £840 a roll. Just last week, he spent his time phoning journalists to moan about his old friend Dominic Cummings. And he's telling the civil service to find out who paid for the redecoration of his flat. The Cabinet Secretary has been asked to investigate who paid for the refurbishments in the flat. Why doesn't the Prime Minister just tell him? That would be the end of the investigation.
So there you go, that's a little snippet from the sort of back and forth between the two leaders on the 28th of April at PMQs. And you heard Boris Johnson say, this is actually being investigated, I'll cooperate, and I've got nothing to hide. But hopefully we will find out what actually happened there, because as far as Cummings is concerned, Johnson tried to get Tory donors to pay for it. And even though now it's provable that Johnson did, you know, cover the bill, the question is, well, did he initially get Tory donors to pay for it, and then he thought, oh fuck, I'm gonna get caught out here, so I'll cover the bill and try to hide this whole thing ever even happened. Hopefully we'll find out. Right, I mentioned at the top of the episode that I had a little chat with my old flatmate Robbie, who's a political journalist. We would have sat down and talked about this kind of thing anyway, so I thought, why not record it and share it with you guys? So we just kind of chewed the fat about the fallout from this and what it all means, and I thought I'd play it back. Hello.
Hi, Julia.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, good. So I take it you've read Cummings' latest blog post. What did you think?
Oh, I was reading it straight away, yeah.
as soon as it went up.
It's hard because I have a very difficult time with him, because I'm interested in the personalities and the drama and the people. Mm-hmm. So I really am. I also think that I don't want to just to be a gossip thing, because it's not, it's really important. This is the people that are running the country. So yeah. I find it hard to quite know the tone to get. And I think that's a problem the media has, which is like, it's really important. It's also two grown men having a kind of spat, and it's embarrassing, but it's also really important because he was in charge, and Boris has been in charge during a pandemic. So, you know, these decisions that they made have changed everything for lots of us. So
right, and to have one call the other one foolish and basically incompetent and morally bankrupt in a mm-hmm. blog post of all things, it's so casual. I mean, yeah, I get what you mean, that, you know, it's important not to undermine the importance of it, but I also think that is part of it. Why is this so petty? let's like almost take the fact that this feels like a gossip story in the context of the severity of it. So I know where you're coming from. Also, I'm kind of trying not to like forgo some joy.
It's been
a hard year and I just want to enjoy stuff.
That's what I mean because part of me relishes it and goes, oh my god, what's Dom said about Boris, and part of me goes, these really are the people running our country. So it's kind of like it's both kind of great box office stuff and also kind of baffling. Yeah,
you tend to have more of a handle on the insider scoop in Westminster than I do. So I wonder, why do you think the blame for those leaks was pinned on Cummings in the first place? Why would they poke the bear when Cummings is already out the door? He's been frozen out, so he has nothing to lose by clapping back at them. Surely that was just a really unwise decision on the part of Downing Street.
I'm inclined to agree with you, yeah. I do think it was a strange tactical decision by Boris Johnson, who supposedly personally phoned three newspaper editors on the Thursday night to brief them that Dominic Cummings was the source of these leaks. It does seem like you say, like poking a bear, and Dominic Cummings hit straight back within less than a day. I wonder if he might be ruining that decision. People say that, I think in Politico email this morning, saying the reason he did that was that Boris Johnson is expecting Dominic Cummings to speak at an inquiry in Parliament in about a month, and a lot of this stuff would come out then anyway, so he might as well get it in early that any bad things you're hearing in the newspapers about Boris Johnson are coming from Dominic Cummings and therefore aren't, you know, that much to be trusted. But I personally don't have a great deal of time for that, and I think it was a slightly poor tactical mistake, because I think if you hit out Dominic Cummings, whatever comes back is going to be even stronger. So I think it was quite a strange tactical decision. But
yeah, I guess there's also the idea that, you know, maybe they thought, let's pin it on the guy who everyone knows is like disgruntled and pissed off. So even if he claps back with the worst possible thing, we can just make out like he's just bitter that he lost his job here. So whatever he says isn't true. I wonder if they thought he was an easy target for that, but they probably underestimated the level to which Cummings was like, right, gloves are off, let's go nuclear, because I don't even care anymore. I can't imagine that they could have foreseen that.
I do think that's true. What interested me about this story is the idea that Boris Johnson rings newspaper editors to tell them that his former aide is a leaker, because I think that's quite unusual. I can't imagine Gordon Brown, for example, doing that. And partly that's possibly because Boris Johnson's a former journalist. He has relationships with editors in ways that are slightly different to other previous politicians. So when Boris Johnson accused Dominic Cummings of being leaking all these stories against him on the Thursday night, when he called the newspaper editors himself in doing that, and whether or not there's a precedent for Boris Johnson calling newspapers is quite interesting, in that in Private Eye they had a story about 3 months ago where he also called newspaper editors in order to stop them to get pictures of Carrie Symons from her time at university. They were going to print some pictures, fairly innocuous pictures of her at university. She didn't seem to like it, tried to get Number 10 operation to block them. And then when that didn't work, Boris Johnson himself actually phoned up the newspaper editors. And what that to me shows is, one, this quite unusual relationship that Boris Johnson has with the newspapers, where he calls them up himself for kind of personal things rather than pandemic things. And two, whether or not she has a big role in his decision making, which Dominic Cummings says in his blog that Boris Johnson was going to close down his leak inquiry because it might have pointed to Carrie Symons' friend, Henry Newman. It gives us a little bit of insight into kind of the personalities that are behind the decisions that have been made during the pandemic, and how much of a big role Carrie Symons has.
Yeah,
she has quite a big one.
Yeah, I would imagine. Although it's quite ironic that we've got this like guy who was an unelected official but incredibly powerful pointing the finger at someone else, i.e. Boris Johnson's fiance, saying, well, here's an unelected official who's too powerful. It's like, yeah, Boris Johnson should be the one that's making all these decisions, and you're all spatting with each other about who was actually doing it, when really the finger should be pointed surely at the Prime Minister. I just think it's quite funny.
You make a good point there. Yeah, all of this, who said this and who said that. At the end of the day, surely Boris Johnson should be making decisions about who his advisors are and what he listens to and who he phones up.
In a sense, it's understandable why Dominic Cummings wanted to write this blog and make a statement to defend himself against claims that he says aren't true. I didn't leak the thing to James Dyson. I didn't leak the thing about lockdown 2. I didn't approve of these flat renovations. But he went above and beyond like a simple, I just want to defend my character. He went full-blown attack against the Prime Minister. Why do you think he went so nuclear? What's his agenda, do you think?
I think, one, he likes to win battles. But more importantly, this is really about lockdown. This is about how did the Prime Minister deal with the pandemic? And Dominic Cummings seems to think that he didn't do a good job. So it seems to be a kind of, if they're going to be an inquiry, like there was with the Iraq War, let's get it in now that it wasn't me that was to blame for the things that went wrong. And Dominic Cummings is a big, let's make the state work beautifully, smoothly guy. And some of our mistakes during the pandemic don't chime very well with his self-image as someone who really knows how to make a kind of government run.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of personal pride about making it sure that it's not his fault and it's someone else's fault, and that fault is Boris Johnson, which I think kind of has to be, right? And Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister. So while Cummings had this kind of big role that all the journalists like to talk him up as making all the decisions, at the end of the day, Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister. So
yeah. And I wonder if this whole thing will set a precedent in the future where if a Prime Minister has a right-hand man or woman who is in some way incredibly involved and like more involved than you would really feel comfortable with as an electorate, then maybe in the future Prime Ministers are going to be a bit wary of that. Like, I don't want to be seen to have a Cummings. Let's not make this a Cummings situation. I wonder if this will set a precedent as like what not to do as someone in charge.
Yeah, because it's funny because Johnson almost hired Cummings in order to be the nasty guy to do the bad things and get the blame for the bad stuff so that he could be the nice guy. And actually now Boris Johnson is being accused of making all the mistakes by the guy he hired to take the blame for the bad things. So it's I think you would rethink it.
I wonder if Boris Johnson was asked, would you hire Dominic Cummings all over again if given the chance to? I wonder if despite all of this crap he would say yes, because nobody knows how to campaign like Cummings, and maybe Johnson wouldn't have got the massive majority that he did without him. Maybe Brexit wouldn't have even happened without Cummings, and Boris Johnson wouldn't even be in this position because David Cameron wouldn't have stepped down. Like, it's, that's how much power Dominic Cummings has had over British history over the last 10 years. It's mad.
Sure, and Boris Johnson was a massive reason why Brexit happened as well.
Yeah.
So as a team, they've changed the country a lot.
Yeah, they've got a lot to answer for. Well, listen, dude, thank you for taking the time. See you soon.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
How do you click?
That was Robbie there, who I just will forever miss living with, because we used to have a ball. Like, if a big story would come out the next day over coffee, we'd be sitting at the kitchen table going, right, what's going on? What are you writing about? What can I include in my podcast? So I miss him a lot, but it's nice to have these little Zoom sessions. I'll put his Twitter account in the episode description if you want to check out his stuff. And just to finish off, I'll read out the last bit of Cummings's blog, which very much implies that there is more to this and more is going to come out the woodwork. It's going to get dirtier and more aggressive before it gets better in terms of this kind of war between Johnson and him, because it finishes off by saying, let me quote it, "The proper way for such issues to be handled is via an urgent parliamentary inquiry into the government's conduct over the COVID crisis, which ought to take evidence from all key players under oath. I will cooperate fully with any such inquiry, and I'm happy to give evidence under oath. I'm happy for Number 10 to publish every email I received and sent between July 2019 and November 2020, with no exceptions, other than obviously some national security intelligence issues." So there, he's basically saying, I want a COVID inquiry to happen. I'm glad that people are looking into the government's conduct throughout this year. It ought to be scrutinised. And by the way, I've got nothing to hide. So let's go. And you could very much kind of interpret what he's saying as, I don't have anything to hide, but the government does. And I'm perfectly happy to take the lid off of all of it. I mean, I'm kind of inferring that from what he said, but it's very, he's overly keen to share everything, isn't he? And then he finishes off with one last sort of punch to Boris Johnson's reputational jugular by saying, quote, it is sad to see the PM and his office fall so far below the standards of competence and integrity the country deserves. I will not engage in media briefings regarding these issues, but I will answer any questions about any of these issues to Parliament on the 26th of May for as long as the MPs want. So 26th of May, guys, get it in your diary, because that's going to be a really big day, I think, in British politics. Cummings basically says, why don't I set the whole day aside if MPs want it? Because they can question me for as long as they want. I've got nothing to lose. Let's go. And the unofficial kind of sentiment in Downing Street is reportedly very much one of, what on earth is he going to say? We have no idea what he's got on us, so we don't really know what to prepare for or what to expect. It's been a hell of a week for the Prime Minister, especially because the latest issue that he's been trying to bear in mind, also he's got a pandemic, the tail end of a pandemic to deal with. Yes, we've vaccinated half the country, but we haven't vaccinated the other half. We've got a lot to do. Not least, there's, you know, we've got to orchestrate help to be sent to folks in India who are, you know, having the most horrendous time with the latest COVID variants over there. And, you know, the Prime Minister's got a lot to juggle. But in terms of the kind of speculation about his character and his reputation, it's been a really bad week, because the latest thing that he's been trying to deal with is this accusation made first by the Daily Mail, again, who are really gunning for him at the moment. But they published this piece claiming that Johnson said this awful thing before the second lockdown in October. And the quote that he supposedly shouted was, I would rather see bodies pile high than, you know, take the country into a third lockdown. So the sentiment was, you know, I really don't want to do this second lockdown, but I'll reluctantly agree to it. But see, if you ask me to do a third one, no way. I'd rather see, quote, bodies pile high. And the Daily Mail have said, we've got sources that are telling us that happened. And now even the BBC and ITV are saying they've got sources who were in and around the room at the time who are confirming that Boris Johnson did say that bodies pile high thing, which is a sickening thing to say. And it's something that he adamantly denies saying. And Keir Starmer at that PMQs that you heard before, he said, in fact, he started it with, did you say that comment? And Boris Johnson said, no, I didn't. So we're at this bit of a kind of stalemate again. He said, she said, between the Daily Mail and the BBC and the ITV, none of whom are willing to give up their sources. You know, who are these people that supposedly heard him say that? And then you've got Boris Johnson on the other side saying, well, if you're not willing to prove who heard it, then you've got nothing on me. And I'm telling you, I never said it. So yeah, we're at this trench warfare on that front. You can decide how you feel about it. Again, I think the gut instinct is to hear something like that and think, I do not want the Prime Minister uttering words like that about the public that he's meant to oversee. I don't want to be seen as a body. I want to be seen as a human being. It's just a disgusting comment. However, you've got some sort of commentators saying, look, we can't take that comment out of context. If he said that or something similar, remember the heat that he was under at the time. This is, you know, just before lockdown two. They're realising that they're going to have to go through this horrible process again that they'd been through earlier in the year. And they've got to deliver this news to the public. And he knows the toll it would take on the economy and on the mental health of the public. And, you know, this is his way of, in a room that he thought was private and protected, saying, I would rather have people die of COVID than because of economic problems and because of mental health problems. So this is the balance that I'm trying to strike. And to take that comment out of context isn't fair. But, you know, I said it in my conversation with Robbie, but something so unique, I think, about Boris Johnson is that regardless of what scandals come rolling out week on week on week, his reputation does have this special immunity that most other politicians don't have. Like, literally a matter of weeks ago, this huge scandal came out that Jennifer Arcuri claimed they'd had this four-year extramarital affair. This stuff is, like, really incriminating, and it's definitely the kind of stuff that would ruin a career of another politician. And yet, I mean, I don't ever really want to talk about that sort of stuff. No, I'm sure you're not surprised why I didn't do a podcast episode on that, because it's just kind of gossip, isn't it? But, like, it's definitely something. If you think about, like, if Tony Blair, if someone had come out and said, whilst Tony Blair was Prime Minister, oh, I had a 4-year affair with him while he was married, that would have really, really hurt him. I'm absolutely sure of it. In a different way to kind of Boris Johnson's experience. It's an interesting thing about him, and I do wonder if it's just that he never apologises for anything. And if you don't apologise, then you don't admit wrongdoing. And it's hard to keep going on about somebody doing something wrong if they refuse to acknowledge it. I do wonder if that's his technique. But yeah, I mean, of course I was never going to cover the extramarital affair rumour thing. It's just gossip. It's not that important. But it feeds into this concept that Boris Johnson has this weird immunity that most other politicians in the UK do not have. And people have had complete, you know, career suicide over way less, to be honest. And yet Boris Johnson has massive scandals on a weekly basis that don't really seem to hurt him. But then again, will Dominic Cummings be his kryptonite? Will this be the actual blow that genuinely hurts Boris Johnson's popularity with his supporters that has remained so strong for basically this entire time, despite scandals and mistakes galore? Let me know what you think. Are you on someone's side? Do you feel like Dominic Cummings is just this bitter, disgruntled ex-strategist who's got nothing to lose, so he's throwing a grenade at Downing Street? Or do you feel like, you know, actually, he's someone that we should trust because he's got nothing to lose and Boris Johnson is more than capable of all of the things that he's accusing him of? Or do you think it falls somewhere in between and that both sides are guilty of spin and exaggeration? Let me know how you feel. You know how to get a hold of me on social media at @JuliaBell_X. I love hearing from you. And please, 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 if you find this podcast helpful, become a patron. Buy me a coffee every month. It's very little money and it keeps me going, keeps me able to make these. So the link to that is in the episode description. And if you become a patron, you get loads of exclusive content. Just last week, I put out a video with, very importantly, with an intellectual property lawyer, my friend Jack, who talked me through the infamous and infinitely important Colin versus Cuthbert caterpillar cake scandal. It was a key conversation where he talked me through the legalities of that and who has a better case between M&S and Aldi. So if you want to check that out, it's on my Patreon. And listen, I hope this helped. Have a fabulous week. Hopefully when Cummings comes out on the 26th of May and sits in front of MPs during this inquiry, we'll learn more about it. Of course, I'll do a podcast then. If you've got questions for future episodes in the meantime, you can always message me. And I'll speak to you in the next one. Okay, goodbye.